Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Roger Hearing, and on this edition, trouble for Volkswagen as its profits drop and it clashes with unions over possible plant closures. The EU imposes tariffs on electric vehicle imports from China, and the reports from Beijing that the government there is pushing its car makers not to invest in EU members who back the tariffs. Also, Britain's new Labour government sets out its first budget with big tax rises it says are needed to restore public services. And we hear from India about the traditional push to buy gold ahead of the Diwali festival.
To be honest, if someone wants to buy, he will buy. Price is not a matter.
The collection, the designs they have, pretty unique in the city, and it will be budget-friendly, the temple designs they have.
And don't forget, you can contact us at any point on WhatsApp. You'll send us a voice note even. It's +44 330 678 3033. That's +44 330 678 3033. Now, Germany's huge car maker Volkswagen has some very big problems. It's seen a 42% drop in its third quarter profit. That's the lowest level in 3 years. And at the same time, it's locked in a battle with unions over a planned overhaul that includes possible plant closures. The German government says it hasn't yet decided on giving state aid to VW to prevent the closures. Tensions between the company and its workers are clear. In Wolfsburg on Wednesday, in remarks by Thorsten Gröger from the IG Metall union.
By cancelling the agreement of job security and other contracts, Volkswagen has opened the Pandora's box. It has risked the faith of the employees, and now it is on Volkswagen to regain that trust.
Joining me now is Matthias Schmidt, a European automotive industry market analyst. Matthias, thanks for being with us. First of all, what is it that's really happening with Volkswagen? It's this massive profits drop. I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. It's largely due to two main reasons. So there's a negative spillover from China. Volkswagen have been especially exposed to the Chinese market. And we've seen a shift in Chinese purchasing patterns. So we've seen more patriotic purchasing, so favoring domestic brands over foreign brands. And that's impacted German manufacturers in particular, where between 30 and 40% of their volumes were sold up until the end of 2023. And also another major headwind is in Europe. So the European market is running at between 2 to 3 million units under pre-COVID levels. And the market's just refusing to come back. And due to the fact that VW Group controls around one quarter of the European new passenger car market, it's impacting VW in particular. And they've just refused to restructure their business while others have done so.
Yeah, it's interesting that they don't seem to be moving at all. And I mean, clearly they're under a lot of pressure, not least from the unions. We heard from a union leader just now, and I gather there are discussions going on, several rounds of them. But what can they do?
Yeah, I mean, that's some of the problems actually stem from the unions. So VW bosses have tried to correct this issue over the last 2 decades, in fact. And the unions have just, quite frankly, refused to budge and have had their head in the sand for those past 2 decades. And if the unions come together with the federal state of Lower Saxony, they essentially have a veto over most decisions. So VW is quite operatic. You can't really put it into a box. It's not necessarily a public company. It's not necessarily a family company. And it's not necessarily a government-owned company. It's kind of a mixture of all three. And when those three elements come together, it's just a mess, basically. And that's what we're seeing now.
And the closures of plants is going to be a massive political issue, isn't it? I mean, is the German government going to get involved? And I mean, you say it's partly almost owned by the German government. Can they put pressure on to avoid those kind of closures?
Yeah, so I mean, it's the state of Lower Saxony rather than the federal government. But yeah, I mean, it's also important to point out it's an election year coming up next year as well. The German government's wobbly as it is. In an election year, you would expect the government to keep German voters in employment. So we can potentially expect the German government to help. But it's tricky because VW aren't actually losing money. If you look at the figures, it's just that profit margins are reducing. So it's not actually in negative territory. The business is actually fairly positive. The big impact is the market is just refusing to bounce back post-COVID. And like I said at the beginning, VW Group is the biggest manufacturer in the region. And it's impacting VW the most. So, I mean, in order for VW to remain on track, they need to restructure their business.
And very brief, Matthias, the motor sector is a big chunk of the German economy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. If you look at manufacturing jobs in Germany, every 10th job is in some way connected to the automotive industry.
Yeah.
And they're producing 4 million cars a year. And as a comparison, the UK is producing 1 million per year. So they're producing four times as many as the UK.
It's a big difference, isn't it? Matthias, thank you so much for being with us. Matthias Schmidt there. Well, joining me also here today is Russ Mould, Investment Director at AJ Bell. Russ, you're going to be with me throughout the programme. But let's talk about this to start with, because we mentioned the German economy there. And, of course, there was, well, a little bit of good news for the German economy today, wasn't there?
There was, Roger. Good afternoon. I mean, economists were expecting the fifth decline in German economic output in eight quarters, but they actually got a little bit of growth, which was a relief at plus 0.2%. Not huge, but better than shrinking. Household consumption better than expected. Government expenditure higher than expected. So that's all positive. But it was still a year-on-year decline for the fifth time in a row. And the IMF says, points out, you still need a big turnaround in private consumption, investment, and particularly in exports to help Germany out of its current malaise.
It's going to be hard. It'll be interesting to see if they do avoid a recession in the end of all this. Stay with us, Russ, because we'll come back to you in just a moment. But one of the interesting things is that one of the major problems from VW, as we heard from Matthias, is the dominance of China in the electric car market in particular. But the EU has just introduced tariffs. Brussels believes that Beijing gives state subsidies to its manufacturers, allowing them to undercut European firms. And so now Brussels has imposed tariffs, which range from 7 to 35% on imported EVs from China. In response, Reuters has been reporting today that China told its automakers to halt big investment in European countries that supported the extra tariffs. Well, I've been speaking about all this to Linlin Yang, Director of Communication and Research at the China Chamber of Commerce, to the European Union. First, her reaction to the new tariffs on EVs.
Well, we express profound disappointment in the Commission's decision to proceed with this protectionist measure against Chinese-made EVs. We are also hugely discouraged by the lack of progress in negotiations before the decision deadline. We consider the investigation's findings unjustified and have voiced serious concerns about the complex impact this decision will have on the ongoing price commitment negotiations.
So you think that the Chinese car companies will be badly affected by these new tariffs?
We're pretty sure. And we did a survey in June already, and even before the tariffs were in place, all the investigations ongoing, they already have a very negative impact on the reputations and on the sales. It will also reduce the the competitive edge of the Chinese cars. Actually, all EV cars made in China, it will impact not only the Chinese car makers, but also European car producers in China. American EV car producers in China as well. They all are subject to heavy tariffs.
Do you think this could lead to a trade war? I see Reuters is reporting that the Chinese government has told car makers not to invest heavily in countries that supported the tariffs in the EU.
Well, unfortunately, at this stage, we cannot rule out the possibility of the escalations of the trade tensions.
What will that mean, though?
You see, the negotiations are ongoing, the consultations are ongoing, but we don't have a clear picture of the outcome yet. So it really also depends on how the impact of the tariffs on the actual performance. And on the other hand, if there's no deal, and probably everyone can assume that some countermeasures would be expected.
And those countermeasures might be big Chinese car companies not putting money into countries that supported these tariffs.
It's difficult to say because the design of the tariffs from the Commission side would be to to force, or you, if you can use this world to help migrate this EV manufacturing from other regions, from China in Pacific back to Europe. But the thing is that it's not that easy. You need a whole ecosystem to make EVs. And you need a whole supply chain to do that. It's not possible to do it in just a couple of years, and it takes time. So that is why those type of things now, with it in place, it made this thing very complex and very costly.
Lilin Liang there, Director of Communication Research at the China Chamber of Commerce to the EU. Still with me, Russ Mould, of course, Investment Director at AJ Bell. Russ, it's interesting. It does look like it's the beginnings of a trade war, doesn't it?
Our intentions have been rising for some time between America and China and between Europe and China. Intriguingly, we've just been talking about Volkswagen. German automakers have actually been publicly stating their opposition to these sort of tariffs because they feel it may leave them locked out or disadvantaged of the Chinese market because of possible countermeasures. The Chinese have been preparing for this for some time. They're much more vertically integrated. We just heard about supply chains there, so they're reducing the reliance on foreign supplied components. They may put their own tariffs on. And although they have, we've now been hearing about them possibly withdrawing from European investment, one way in which was thought they might get around these tariffs was to build capacity in Europe, notably BYD in Hungary.
So we are moving into that. And you mentioned about America, of course, you know, should there be another Trump presidency. Donald Trump made it very clear he's going to impose even more tariffs on China. So the lines are being drawn pretty strongly.
They are. And indeed, the Biden-Harris administration actually hasn't withdrawn the tariffs that the Trump administration imposed. And Kamala Harris, the current Vice President and Democratic candidate, has been taking a similarly tough line to Donald Trump, even if perhaps with not quite such aggressive measures. But yeah, it's very much tensions still elevated.
Interesting. Stay with us, Russ. Much more to come. Well, let's talk about another country, not far, I suppose, from Germany. I'm talking about Britain. Here in the UK, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the politician in charge of the nation's finances, has delivered the first budget of the new Labour government. It's also the first time a woman has done this in the British Parliament. An 800-year wait, in fact. It was seen as a key moment for the new administration, trying to deal with what they say is a huge hole in public finances without breaking pre-election promises not to raise income tax.
Working people will not see higher taxes in their payslips as a result of the choices that I am making today. Yeah. That is a promise made and a promise fulfilled. Yeah.
Rachel Reeves there, of course, speaking in Parliament. Joining me now is our correspondent, Andy Verity. Andy, what she talked about a lot, particularly at the beginning of the speech, was the amount of a hole, really, in the economy that she said the previous Conservative administration had left. I mean, we've heard £22 billion, we've heard £40 billion. I mean, what's the view on that? And has she been backed by the OBR, this group that is supposed to keep an eye on government finances?
The answer is up to a point. So when she came in July, Rachel Reeves, the new Chancellor, complained that there were lots of pressures on public spending which hadn't been accounted for and information which hadn't been given to the independent public spending watchdog, the Office for Budget Responsibility. And they've just come out with a report today to go alongside the budget, which agrees with that up to a point. It says that they would have estimated materially higher public spending had they had all the information they needed. But that aside, what you're really looking at here is a very traditional Labour budget. It's raising taxes by a large amount and raising spending by even more. So you've got like £40 billion of tax rises. But for example, next year, you're going to have £63 billion of extra spending, which, of course, will be funded by borrowing. Now, what the Labour government is saying is that they desperately need public investment to get growth going, to restore infrastructure and public services to what they were. And therefore, they have to do that extra spending. But it's certainly not bothered the markets. The markets have taken it in their stride. But businesses, landlords, the wealthiest tenth of the population probably aren't going to like it that much.
No, that's where the burden seems to be on. But one of the interesting things in all this, Andy, she changed the rules about what you consider debt to be when you're balancing debt, because she's had these rules about how much debt we can have and how it's balanced out with expenditure and what it's spent on. But she's kind of redefined it, hasn't she?
Well, yeah. So you had a rule before that said the Chancellor had to get the net debt of the country coming down are at the end of 5 years. But of course, 5 years never comes. It's another 5-year target next year and another year the year after. So she's changed that to be within this parliament. So there's actually a fixed deadline for it. But also the measure of debt that she's taken has changed. So if you're talking, for example, about public sector pensions, you know you've got a debt there. You're going to have to pay out these pension liabilities at some point. But you also have assets. So you will have invested in shares and bonds, etc., to match those debts you're going to pay out. And the strange thing about the rules before was that you couldn't take those into account. So the logic here is you're allowed to take those financial assets, those shares, those bonds, whatever you hold, into account to assess your financial position. And that's fair enough. And that's one of the ways that she's allowed herself to spend so much more on public investment, which the hope is will get growth going.
Well, we'll see if it all works out. Thanks so much for being with us, Andy. Andy Verity there. Well, one of the measures that was confirmed today is a rise in the minimum wage by 6.7%. It brings it up to around $16 an hour. Welcome, of course, to workers, but a challenge for some businesses. And also, the retail, hospitality and leisure industry is going to receive 40% relief on local business taxes. That's actually less than it previously had. Well, let's get some reaction from someone at the sharp end. Louise McLean, part of the Signature Group, which owns multiple bars across Scotland, also director of the Centre for the Edinburgh Business Group and spokesperson for the Scottish Hospitality Group. Louise, welcome to the programme. Are you unhappy?
Yes, I'm afraid I really am. To address the point very quickly on rate relief, that is a devolved matter. We do not get rate relief in Scotland.
Yeah, I should make it clear, it's different rules in Scotland than England or Wales. Yeah.
But no, the announcement today wipes out all of our profit, a business that's been in existence for over 20 years. And as of April this year, we will be a loss-making enterprise employing 740 people.
And that's because of the national insurance, which we should say is a tax, which is going up on people who employ people, essentially.
And also the threshold coming down.
Yeah. And
that's the biggie that we didn't see coming. We knew employers' NI was going up. We knew the national living wage was going up. The threshold coming down, that's £500,000 of costs straight to our bottom line.
I suppose, you know, if when we're looking for positives, I mean, you know, obviously the minimum wage doesn't help you, but it puts money in the pockets of workers who, you know, traditionally not that well paid, and I guess might go down the road and perhaps buy themselves a pint of beer or something. So, I mean, it puts more money into the economy, doesn't it?
So there's two sides of that. What we're seeing in the leisure sector is people that do have more money in their pockets, they're not spending it in leisure. They've already got their savings depleted by COVID. They're propping them up. So we haven't seen an increase in leisure spending, certainly in the last 12 months when the minimum wage did go up by 10%. However, if we want to stay in business, if we want to keep being an employer of 740 people, we will have to put our prices up. No doubt. At the moment, we're looking at a 10% price increase on every single item we sell just to stand still.
But she did say, I think it was a penny off a certain sort of beer, come draft beer, things like that. There's one or two concessions there. You're saying it's not enough?
Oh, No. I mean, this will lead to... This is going to put people out of business, sadly, unfortunately, because I just don't think that customers can tolerate such a large leap in the cost of going out. There's still value for money equations to be used. And I think going out for dinner in the UK is going to become a real luxury that people will have to save for. It's not going to be something people are going to do on a whim.
Do you think it's just an easy target, really? I mean, but people like going out for a meal. You know, if it's a budget that's supposed to please people a bit, you'd think that would come there, but you're saying it's an easy target.
Well, I think we've always thought we were an easy target. I think people think that we are the last show in town and the hospitality industry can always bounce back. I don't want to be doom and gloom, but certainly today's announcement has got me reaching for my calculator in utter bewilderment.
Are you going to stay in business?
We damn right.
Well, you say you've gone to not making a profit, so I have to ask.
Because we'll have to pass the price on to the consumer, as will car prices, as will construction. At the end of the day, we will have to stay in business. We will have to increase our prices, but there's a real desire to do that. We will not compromise our standards. We will continue to be one of the best operators in Scotland, but it's going to be tricky.
Well, Louise, I wish you the very best of luck. Good luck with that. Louise McLean there, and the difficulties for the hospitality sector. Russ, let me bring you back in on this. I mean, it is clearly, well, it's been a budget that's never going to please everybody. How have the markets reacted out of interest? I mean, what movements have there been?
Not that much, Roger. A lot of the major initiatives had been trailered very publicly before the major event, unlike in 1947, when a Chancellor of the Exchequer was fired for doing that. It now seems to be standard practice.
And you and I, of course, were broadcasting back then.
Markets have had a chance to think about it. The one such thing that you have seen today is the headline government borrowing cost, and as the 10-year bond or 10-year gilt, that has crept a little bit higher, almost a level seen during the panic under Liz Truss's brief administration of 2 years ago. So markets are looking at this borrowing. They like the idea of growth, but they're a little bit worried about the funding and the amount of borrowing that may be needed to get it going.
Russ, thanks very much as ever. And yes, what's going to happen with the Labour government and with the future of this budget? It'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. Don't forget, you can contact us on WhatsApp. Send us your thoughts, +44 330 678 3033. You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Now, we're moving into the last days of the US election campaign. And all this week, we've been looking at the all too important swing states. Now, from 1 o'clock GMT in Business Matters, we're going to be reporting from the heartland of America's automotive industry, Michigan, where it seems there's a disconnect between what the candidates are talking about when they visit and what voters want to be addressed. The state is seeing record employment and the automotive industry is in good health. And these voters say they have different concerns.
It's about buying groceries, the cost of fuel. I live in a small town, so we travel further to buy what we need to buy and to do what we need to do. And it's just it costs more.
Definitely middle class folks are like being greatly impacted by healthcare debt. As a person who's went to college and has several degrees, student loan debt is also a very large concern. And not just the loans, the interest on top of that.
I think that if Trump doesn't win, this country is finished. I really believe that. This country is finished because the Democrats will destroy it completely with their socialism programs. I had a lot more money when Trump was in. You know, I've been retired now for 12 years, and I'm not hurting, but I'm also, right now, I'm just spending money on necessities. You know, and that's not good for the economy. That hurts businesses.
Some voices from Michigan, and we're going to move on later in the week to Arizona and Georgia. Now, let's move to India, where the Hindu festival of Diwali is about to be celebrated by millions of people, not just in India, but all around the world. In India, buying gold for weddings and major festivals such as Diwali is considered auspicious. Demand normally soars around now in the country that is, in fact, the world's second biggest buyer of gold. But this year, prices, well, they've hit a record high. Despite that, Sachin Jain from the World Gold Council says the demand has increased.
January to September 2024, the consumption or the demand in India has been 537 tons. And this, we compare to last year in the same period, was about 494 tons. So we've been about 9% up from last year to this. The main changes have been financial markets and the returns of gold from a perspective of investment. This year, the performance of gold has been amongst the best in any asset class. And that certainly is a big trigger. And we've just come out of one of the best monsoon seasons that we've seen. And that clearly will reflect on the clear money in the hands of the rural economy and the people. And that'll have a good upsurge on the gold consumption.
Sachin Jain there from the World Gold Council. Well, let's talk now to my colleague, Davina Gupta, who's in Delhi. Happy Diwali, Davina. Is I saying it the
Happy
right way?
Happy Diwali, Roger. Absolutely. And to all the listeners for the BBC World Service. And you can listen to some fireworks around here in Delhi, although they are banned. But you can imagine that people are excited.
Of course.
They get their hands on some of them every year and bursting them.
Well, I hope it's not too noisy and people will be able to hear us. What I was going to ask you is, I mean, just talk about the part that gold plays in Diwali.
Well, it's considered as an auspicious metal, Roger. So all the families here, most of the Hindu families, they buy some or the other form of gold. It could be either a gold coin or jewelry, because it's we worship as Hindu families to the goddess of wealth. And it is believed that if you buy gold during this time, your wealth will increase and there'll be good fortune for your family.
But your wealth will decrease because the price is so high. I mean, that's the problem, isn't it?
Well, it seems to be a temporary decrease because the gold is also seen as an investment by families. And it's like the fear of missing out, even though the prices are soaring. But people try and invest whatever money they have saved up through the year on this gold so that they can later on, after a few years, can see that appreciation of this wealth. In fact, I've been speaking to some of the customers about this, and I went to a jewelry shop in central Delhi to ask them if this time round, because gold prices have hit a record high across in this year, if it's putting them off spending. And this is what they told me.
To be honest, if someone wants to buy, he will buy. Price is not a matter.
The collection, the designs they have, pretty unique in the city, and it will be budget friendly. The temple designs they have, it just resembles with the authenticity and our traditions.
Well, clearly, some of those people who told me that they're buying gold, they were spending quite a bit. And someone who was really happy was a shop owner of that place. That's Mr. Om Prakash, who owns Panalal Om Prakash Jeweler. And he told me how he was seeing consumer behavior this time round.
There is one phenomena. The phenomena is the prices are ever rising. And this very year, I may say 15%, 16% increment. And so that is the one reason why the people want to buy gold and they prefer, because this is anytime cash.
Om Prakash there. So, Davina, I mean, we talk about gold. I mean, do people go in and say, well, I'll have a nice bar of gold, or is it a piece of jewellery? I mean, how do people get it?
So you can simply go and to any retail shop and buy jewelry or a gold coin. A gold coin could be anywhere between 5 grams to 10 grams, and the value is decided about what's the rate of gold during that time. But the other way that many people are now investing, especially youngsters, is an exchange-traded fund, or it's a stock of gold. So it's not a physical gold, but you can buy these funds and keep it with you for years to come. And as they say, the attraction stays.
I can well imagine. Gold doesn't tarnish, which is the great thing about it, of course. Neither does Diwali, of course. I wish you a very happy Diwali. And I hope it all goes well. And a happy Diwali to our listeners. That's World Business Report.